You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and this week I'm excited to bring you kind of a unique rural resource. One of the things about rural that I think is really incredible is that, truthfully, rural is something that stretches far back into Christian history, right? I think sometimes when we are living in our modern era, we think of, you know, urban church and suburban church and rural church, and we talk a lot about what's happening right now at this moment in history. But can I tell you that this new focus on rural church that's happened in the last several decades is, in fact, not new at all. And in fact, we have kind of this great story tracing all the way back to Jesus and the apostles of people going into the villages, the countrysides, the towns, and truthfully living and trying to do church in such a way that reaches rural places. In my humble opinion, it's just so exciting when we get to kind of figure out that rural has been there the whole time, quietly in the background. And so today, I want to talk about a resource that actually comes to us from a pretty ancient source. We're talking John Chrysostom, okay, and he lived in 347 to 407, right? He was the Archbishop of Constantinople before the empire fell. It was way back in Roman Empire times. We're talking like 300 years after Jesus, roughly. And John Chrysostom wrote several books. He was a credit to what eventually would become modern preaching, because what he did is he wrote a lot of homilies, right? And a homily really is kind of this precursor to the sermon, and it's basically breaking down the scripture and doing stuff with it in terms of, you know, telling people about it, preaching the sermon on it. And so all these homilies are actually collected in different works, and he's got them from different books of the Bible, things like Matthew and Acts and all these others. And the thing is, John Chrysostom was a very influential guy, but what intrigues me most is as I read his works, again, we're talking 1,700 years ago, when I read his works, I can't help but see the thread of the rural church in what he wrote. And here's how I want to start it, right? I kind of want to look at these different moments in John Chrysostom's writings that I think are just prolific in pointing out and creating this image of Jesus that makes him a friend to the rural church, even in the modern day. Again, my hope is that what you will take away from today and today's resource is the idea that rural has been present the whole time. Truthfully, like, rural church has never disappeared. It's never, it's never been lacking in terms of what Jesus has been up to there. And I really think that studying a little bit of John's works will give us this picture of, like, man, from the beginning throughout all of history, God was with the rural church. And so starting with this quote, right, he says this quote kind of talking about Matthew 5, and he's talking about the Beatitudes, and this is what he says. I love this, right? This is how he describes Jesus. He says, "Notice how humble and free from pride he was. He did not bring people along with him everywhere. When healing was needed, he traveled all over, visiting towns and countryside alike. But now, when the crowd had grown very large, he sat in one place, not in the middle of a city or marketplace, but on a mountain in a wilderness. He teaches us not to seek attention, to separate ourselves from the noise of everyday life, especially when we want to learn wisdom and talk about what we must do." I love this picture of Jesus. He goes up on the mountain. He's not found in the town square, but instead in the countryside, drawing people to him, people from no-name places and no-name backgrounds. And he says, "I want to dispense wisdom." I think a lot of what the rural church has to offer to the church at large is this theme of reflection and gaining wisdom. That last sentence, he says, "He teaches us not to seek attention, to separate ourselves from the noise of everyday life, especially when we want to learn wisdom and talk about what we must do." Again, I think the rural church is here to remind us that doing the gospel work is not about the attention. It's not about the stage or being the center of it. In fact, it's sometimes a very separated thing. It's a very set apart thing where Jesus meets us there. And rural can be a place of retreat, not retreat in a bad sense, like we're retreating from a battle, but a retreat in terms of communing with God. You know, I find it significant that when people wanted to get alone with God, they went out into the wilderness, into these secluded places. And Jesus is no different. To give this wisdom he had acquired from heaven, he seeks out a mountainside in the country. People come to him, and he says, here you can hear the voice of God. Again, my hope is that rural practitioner, that you see this Jesus, right? When I read these words of John Chrysostom written hundreds and hundreds of years ago, I can't help but see the rural church of today and the rural pastor of today still situated in the wilderness, still bending and getting on our knees before the Father, asking for prayer, asking to hear the voice of God and to feel his wisdom and feel his presence. And I just want you to know that for John Chrysostom, Jesus was a rural Jesus. He was very much present. He was very much walking with us. And I don't think it's insignificant that we can kind of count on him as that person. He also talks about the importance of our heart and kind of how it relates to temptation, right? He's kind of walking through Matthew. He's walking through the Beatitudes and those chapters. And in the middle of homily, I mean, it's just called homily, you know, 17, talking about Matthew, he talks about the temptation to adultery, right? And there's that famous passage where Jesus talks about, it's not just that we commit adultery, it's that if we look at a woman with lust, we've already lost, you know? And so John picks up the conversation, and tell me if the following just does not so capture rural life, right? As I'm reading John and I'm living in a small town, I'm going, man, this guy's speaking my language, because here's what he's describing, okay? He talks a little bit about the power of community, right? And so this is what he says. He's talking about forming habits, right? Because again, we don't want to just, say that it's good enough that we haven't committed adultery. We want to live in such a way that we've made good habits in our lives, right? And so he's talking about habits, and he says this. He says, I also say this, just as a habit is a powerful way to be deceived, right? If we have a bad habit, it can lead to sin, is what he's saying. He said, it's also easy to correct. And then this is his solution, and I think it's so rural when he says this. He says, if you set many watchful eyes on yourself at home, like your servant, your wife, your friend, you will easily break free from bad habits, being closely watched and held back by all. If you manage this for just 10 days, you won't need more time afterwards. Everything will be firmly established in the strength of a new, excellent habit. And he's talking about cultivating holiness. And again, did you notice what he said there? He said, when you put many eyes on yourself, it can help you live a God-centered life. I don't know about you, but there is nothing that feels more rural than saying there's a lot of eyes watching me, right? Because when you live in a small town, it's a fishbowl is how it's been described. I mean, you are known. If you make a misstep at the grocery store, on the edge of town, out of town, people somehow know because they just, it's such a close quarters that people are like intimately involved in each other's life. And so for us, I think it's a huge statement to like, man, 1700 years ago, he's saying, guys, you know what is the answer to struggling with temptation? To put yourself in the kind of community where it's close-knit, where you're being watched, where you're being held accountable. And I thought to myself, man, John Chrysostom, you didn't know, but you were speaking the language of a rural church in the 21st century. So again, what I love about his works is that he kind of, you get these sneak peeks, right? And again, to be clear, this is a much larger body of literature. You can definitely find his works anywhere you want, really. You can definitely Google him. But what I love is seeing how the story of rural, it wasn't the forefront of his mind, but it was woven in through these different homilies and teachings. As he reflects on the passages of scripture, he's also saying, hey, doesn't this find a place in our kind of tight-knit communities in our small-town living? But continuing on, he gets to kind of this point where he really does shine a brilliant spotlight on rural, and I love it. So he's talking about the book of Acts. What I was just referencing was the book of Matthew, but John Chrysostom talks about the book of Acts. So he is addressing rich people. He's addressing the wealthy. He's addressing those with means and lands and estates, and this is what he says. He sets it up, and he says, hey, if you are rich in this life, he says, you have a duty to your fellow saint. And what he's about to break down for us is this idea that we as people, as Christians, are responsible to see the church cultivated in every place, right? This is what he says. He said, ought not each individual believer to build a church, to get a teacher, to cooperate him to make this above all his objects, that he may be Christians, or that all may be Christians. He says basically in that sentence that each individual should build a church to find a pastor to help them make other people into Christians, right? And I love this next statement, because again, he's addressing the rich and he says, hey, all of us should be in the business of making churches, to making teachers, to making people who are Christian, right? But this is what he says. He says, wherefore, and this is passionate, I beseech and implore, as a favor I entreat, yea, as a law I lay it down, that there be no estate, and by estate he means piece of land or part of the country, that is destitute of a church. What a powerful echo of rural ministry through the ages. He says, I beseech and implore, no, a favor I entreat, no, a law I lay down. He's bringing full seriousness, and he says, let there not be a single place, a single countryside, a single village or hamlet, a single area that does not have a church. And he says, how will this come about? And he talks and encourages the wealthy. He says, it is your job to lay down your riches, to not worry about investing in another market or tavern. And he goes on to really kind of chastise the rich. And he says, don't just build wealth for yourself. But this is what he says. He says, look not at the cost, but calculate the profit. He says, the people that you will reach, this is how he puts it, that thy people yonder cultivate thy field, right? Those people that you're reaching are the ones working for these rich people. And he says, but you should cultivate their souls. They bring to thee thy fruits, meaning they bring in the harvest. So you need to raise them to heaven. What powerful words. He says that nobody is exempt from this beautiful privilege of caring about out-of-the-way places, of saying, hey, don't just treat these people as the common folks, the peasants, the countryside. You know, again, you have to think back in the day what that kind of meant and what that imagery was. He says, instead, you need to think of them as brothers, as sisters, as people that you need to be raising to heaven, not looking at the cost, but wanting Christians in every place and every village. He also goes on to tell the rich that they need to have an eternal mindset, right? Thinking generationally, right? Because we know that rural is a place of laying the foundation, planting the seeds, and maybe not even seeing the harvest for a while. But this is what he says. He said, make for a beginning a small house to serve as church. Thy successor, your successor, will build a porch. His successor will make other additions, and the whole shall be put to thy account. Basically, what he's saying is make a small investment today, rich, wealthy person. Invest in the villages around you. Invest in the small towns and the out-of-the-way places. And even if 10 people build on this church, you will still have God credit it to your account that you cared about his people in every place. But this is crazy. He goes on to kind of talk about, you know, building barns and housing our wealth, right? So he tells the wealthy, he says, now where there is straw and grain and such to be stored, you make no difficulty of building something, right? He says, if you have crops and wealth, you'll build a barn in a heartbeat. He says, but for a place where the fruits of souls may be gathered in, we bestow not a thought. And he says this, the people are forced to go miles and miles and to make long journeys that they may get to church. And he challenges the rich again. He says, what are you doing with your life? There's people everywhere, people in the countryside. Again, he goes back and back to this rural theme, saying that they deserve a church in their area. They deserve a church in every small town and every place where people are gathered. And I love how he describes the rural church. And this is kind of the heart of what I love here, right, is that it seems to me, and again, you're kind of reading between the lines of John Chrysostom, and it seems to me like he truly gets the essence of rural church, because here's what he says. He says, if the village will get a church, he says, then the village will be free from all evil. Now, that's a little dramatic in my opinion, but he says, but he's basically saying if there can be a church in these communities, godly character will follow. And then he says this, they will also have another comfort if sickness should befall or if death. And basically, again, we know this as Christian people, that the rural church exists to walk with people through their last days, their hard days, in sickness and death. The rural church, the rural pastor is there at every hospital bedside, at every graveside, pastoring the community. He says, if there can be a church in a rural community, there can be comfort in death. And then he says this, and tell me this doesn't sound rural to you. He says, then again, the friendships formed there by people as they go side by side to church are not struck up at random places, and the meetings there are far more pleasant than those which take place in marts and fairs. Basically, again, to interpret it, he's saying, the meetings that we have, the friendships we make in church, are deeper and longer lasting than those just from casual acquaintance or business settings, right? And so he takes this whole sermon to accost the rich and say, your eyes are too narrow. You're looking too closely at your own wealth. He says there's a world out there, and not just a world, a rural world, a countryside, a village, a hamlet. And here's how he describes it. He challenges them and he said, raise thou a garrison against the devil, for that is what the church is. Raise thou a garrison against the devil. Can I tell you something? When I read these words, of course, I think of kind of this challenge to the wealthy, but I think of John Chrysostom himself, this Archbishop of Constantinople. Keep in mind, Constantinople was one of the biggest cities in the empire. He is metropolitan at his core. He is urban. And yet he gets up and he says, if we can get a church in these small towns, it will be a garrison against the devil. He says it will create the relationships. It will change the landscape. He knew that it was not just about raising people to a city. He said, I will use my platform in the city to plant churches in the country. Can I just tell you what makes me so inspired about reading old things? Is that when I get discouraged, I think, you know what? God doesn't just see my plight today. God doesn't just see you today, rural pastor. He sees you all the way through history. He sees every rural church, where it's been, what's been going on, and he's still with us, just like he was 1,700 years ago. Jesus is still calling people to these mountainsides and country lanes to seek wisdom and find it. He's still calling us to be a garrison against the devil in our small towns. And so, honestly, I hope if you leave with nothing else, know that God is with you. The God of small town, the God of rural, the Jesus who gathers in the countryside. And know that what you're building, while it may seem at times discouraging or insignificant, is part of God's design to reach people for the kingdom, and you are an incredible part of that. So I hope that you check out these resources. Again, you can check, I will put the specific homilies and sermons this came out of in the show notes. You can also check out John Chrysostom's other works. They're very publicly available. But for this week, again, I just really hope you're encouraged and inspired and challenged. I love looking at history and seeing how God continued to work in small, out-of-the-way places. But for now, from all of us at Rural Advancement, I just want to say again, whenever you get the opportunity, share this resource with others. Tell somebody that there's sets of conversations that they need to hear. And we'll be back in a couple weeks with an interview. It's going to be so exciting. I can't wait for it. But for now, I have been your host, Joe Epley. He has been the Church Father, John Chrysostom. And we will see you next week.